Hello, Rebel! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome your wives, your sisters, your daughters, your girlfriends, fiancés, and even your female pets. What are you looking at while we're talking, mate? I'm not wearing anything.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance.
Rebel Alliance isn't going to go away.
GW. I was going to say GW, and GW in my mind does not mean Gears Workshop.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance.
Anyway,
you're not wrong.
I've never said to you, Fed, that you're wrong.
Yeah, if I lose, it means I wasn't trying. But if I win, I also wasn't trying.
Yeah,
I'm not a tryhard.
I wouldn't even call it a dicing. I would just say that he had more favorable dice than I had.
The other guy was not impressed.
What's the worst that can happen, right? What is the worst that can happen?
Ladies and gentlemen, shoot Fed TV, everybody.
Yeah, it's like when you just decide that you don't care about your elves anymore, and you're just gonna throw them at the ball until it works. Things can happen.
Oh, don't get me always started. Like 4 minutes.
And
did he really just say that right now to me with a straight face? Did he really just say an hour and a half to 2 hours? Calling this suckers after all.
Well, now that we've figured out that situation, guys, go and cage dive your ogre.
Take it away.
Oh, it's gonna be good, man.
Oh.
Hello, Rebel, and welcome back to Rebel Alliance. This is Rebel Alliance episode 98. Rebel Alliance, of course, being the only Blood Bowl podcast that did social isolation when it was called sitting in your room in your pants playing video games. I am, of course, your host, Full Metal COS. I am joined by my wonderful friend, Mr. Super Fed TV.
Hello, Metal and everybody.
Are you wearing pants right now?
I am wearing pants right now.
No, I
just put them on.
That's how professional Superfed is, everybody. He literally put pants on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
What a guy. This is what you pay for, people. This is what your hard-earned Patreon dollars...
I had to do a little voice work, and it actually helped to have a little extra heat in the moment.
Well, were the tight pants or something? Did you?
No. I didn't want to be in, you know, shorts. I wanted actual pants to keep a little warmer.
Keep it professional, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. Now, we promised this a while ago, actually. Because we enjoyed having him on so much. We had a quick chat with this guy a little while back. And I've been keeping this one close to my chest that he was coming back this soon. But, frankly, we all enjoyed chatting to him so much, and I think he was really popular with the listeners too. So we've brought Mongooses Loose back for a full episode.
Yeah, so excited to be here.
How's
so
it going, excited. My dude? How are you doing?
We're making it, man. We're making it in quarantine times.
Are you wearing pants right now?
Yeah. Yes. Oh yeah. No formal jeans.
Even. God, am I the only one who's not bothering right now? Am I? Like, I'm sitting in my pajamas and I'm just going, yeah, this is life right now.
No, I pondered wearing a suit. You know, it feels like an interview almost.
Yeah. Well, the tie is a bit much, I think, maybe. But I think you've got to do it like the League of Legends style one, where they wear like the jeans and then they wear the suit on the
suit
top.
Suit jacket. Yeah. And a button up. Yes. Have you watched their at-home version of the LCS?
I've been. You know what? Right. Full credit to them for keeping it going. The first one
it's amazing.
A bit of a train wreck, but it got so much better as it went on.
That's the best part. Is the train wreck like? You've got literally, like, full, like, Hollywood production levels of quality for some stuff. And then they transition, and it's just all four of the analysts in their bedrooms with one of their dogs behind them.
Have they moved on to the live cameras? Because when I was watching it, they hadn't got that far. And it was just, they just put photos of them up on the screen. And it was just three pictures talking to us.
That was pretty bad. No, they've got live cameras, but it's literally the backgrounds of their living rooms and bedrooms, and it's hysterical.
I think the one that got me, when I first saw they announced it and they said, oh yeah, we know we're having teething problems the first week was pretty bad. Anyone who doesn't watch League of Legends on Twitch is going to have completely missed this, and it'll be going right over the head. But there was one, I think it was Vedius, who is literally... His rig is set up on top of a chest of drawers in his bedroom. He doesn't even have a desk. Like, how do you live like this, man? Like, what the hell? Like, is this...
Professional video game player.
You remember when Monty got in all the trouble because he was pushing for Riot to actually pay, like, you know, industry minimum wage for voice casters? Yeah, I bet you're wishing you'd listen to him now, aren't you? And you don't even have a desk. Oh Jesus, it's rough. But then some of them have got crazy, crazy good rigs. Like I think Froskuren had exactly the rig I would have expected Froskuren to have.
Sure.
Like, the only thing missing is, like, a little box in the corner full of cigars on her. If you missed all this, guys, seriously, check the League of Legends Reddit. It's just, all the pictures and stuff are on there, and it's awesome. Did you watch League, Mongoose, or we completely lost you?
No, completely lost, but happy to be a ride on the, for the roller coaster.
The knuckles are white, but he's just hanging on.
Representing the rest of the audience that doesn't make sense that Metal and I talk about.
I'm like, I have a mouse, and I've seen stuff on Twitch, but...
Do you have a desk?
I have a folding desk, so not even a real desk.
Well, it's better than a chest of drawers, so it's...
That is true.
There's a little bang in the background, and I had a nightmare that it was a folding desk collapsing. I was like, oh, oops. Should we not mention the folding desk?
Now, I will say, from what I've seen, whenever they have the face cameras, I feel like their blink to non-blink ratio is massively off for... the way they look at things.
I think it's got to be so weird for them, because obviously they're used to doing it face-to-face, aren't they? And you use a lot of, like... Me and Fed are quite good at not stepping on each other, because we've done, like, the non-face-to-face audio work on the podcast for a while now, so I think it's pretty rare that we step over each other.
It's like a dancing rhythm, really. Like, you get a sense for when they're going to move out, and you move in, and all that.
But obviously, yes. These guys, they used to, like, be stood next to each other so they can, like, signal to each other. Like, they got hand motions and stuff, and one of them wants to talk, or one of them will do something with his hands, like I'm doing right now, that none of you can see. But trust me, it's... I'm doing finger guns right now, and I don't even know why.
You're speaking Italian. I don't understand it.
Ciao, bello. It's fine. No, so it must be really weird for them to get back into that rhythm of not doing it face-to-face. It feels like we've gone back about 8 years in League of Legends, when, like, Quickshot was streaming tiny, tiny, like, TSM Invitationals from in front of a brick wall in his loft.
Yeah, it's crazy to think how far they've come to. Someday Blood Bowl, maybe, you know, could be on that level.
I'd love that to happen, but I just don't see it happening.
No, I don't either. It's a dice game.
It's too niche.
I think the good thing about League is, like, I can put League on when, like, my kids are watching or whatever, and they kind of get the flow. They get who's winning and who's losing by watching. But if they walk past and I'm watching a Blood Bowl stream, they're just sat there going, "So what is happening now? Why did that dice just get rolled?" I was trying to explain it to my 15-year-old, because she was sat there over my shoulder watching my G-Man game this week. Mm-hmm. And she was going, "You should definitely do that." And I went, "But I can't do that." And she's like, "Why?" "Because that's against the rules." And she's like, obviously, it sounds like I'm being third-party coach now, but I don't think it was particularly helping. Like, when someone goes, "You should totally punch that guy with the ball," and the guy with the ball sat inside a cage, you're like, you're not helping.
Well, and I think you guys talked about this several podcasts ago, like, going back. But, like, some of it's the pacing, too. Like, it's a lot more fun to watch a Blood Bowl game on replay when it's just every decision being made. And as much fun as it is to figure out what someone might do, sometimes that dead time is just that. It's just dead time.
Yeah, I think you can, as a good caster for a little bit, get some, you know, you can get some good analysis in there. Like, Haring Zord will tease some cool facts out or some bits of information out and things like that. But then you can't do it every turn, because not every turn it necessarily needs to be the same puzzle, right?
Yep.
Maybe it does. I mean, maybe I play Blood Bowl too fast. I don't know. This is definitely a problem for me. I do play quite rapidly. Speaking of playing Blood Bowl, we should probably talk about Blood Bowl, because we are a Blood Bowl podcast, and we've kind of been going for 9 minutes without talking about Blood Bowl.
It's not a record, but it is a solid showing.
Well, I could talk about Path of Exile, because I've been playing that in my spare time, but yeah, Superfan would cry.
Tell me about your game this week.
You know what? It's actually been 2 weeks since our last episode, and I think, you know, it's actually, to talk not about Blood Bowl, because we were talking about Blood Bowl, not about Blood Bowl, the whole working from home thing, I know that's working, and, you know, the quarantine and the self-isolation and stuff, that's working wonders for giving a lot of people that I speak to in the league a ton more free time. Mm-hmm. For me, a stay-at-home father of five, who is used to having my days free, where I could just potter around and do the housework, and then maybe come and play a match if I need to, and do this and that, or do a bit of recording, or do my recap, you know, whenever, during the day. Yeah, I have no free time anymore. Like, from 8 o'clock in the morning, if it's a good day, like when the first kid wakes up, till 9:30 at night, when the last kid goes to bed, That's, I am on duty. It's like, I have no free time anymore. This is, me and the missus are playing like tag wrestling to try and get us each some free time. But we can't even send them outside to play. It's like, it's, I've lost any segment of free time. So we may have to move towards once every fortnight for the podcast for a little while, just till this settles down. I wanted to talk about that before we got too far into it, because...
Yeah, works for me.
I know there'll be some people who will probably quite... I'll try and do it more often, but like I say, it's difficult at the moment to justify getting away and going to the missus. By the way, I'm just going to go and record for 2 hours, and then I'm going to get it all saved and uploaded, which takes another half an hour, 45 minutes, and then I'm going to... You know what I mean? It's like... It takes a while. But on the plus side, I am going to be speaking to the guy who manages our SoundCloud to make sure we can catch up to the back episodes, because we've got a gap in our SoundCloud, and between our SoundCloud and our Podomatic, where the SoundCloud only goes up to about episode 60-odd, and then the Podomatic only goes up to like episode 88 or something. So there's like 28, 30 episodes missing in the middle. And I'm working to get those filled in so people do have something to listen to during their hours spent trying to pretend they're doing work from home. Because I know not all of you are.
Yeah, I'm about, I would say maybe 60% productive, which is about 10% more productive than I am at when I actually go into work. So
it's actually worked out well for you.
Yeah, I get more done because I have less people coming to my desk and interrupting me.
So potentially, like, if it comes out of this and you decide this is something you enjoy, maybe that's the perfect opportunity to go to your boss as well. Look, I did more right. from home, right?
Right. Exactly.
And now I can wear pajamas everywhere.
I mean, at my current job, I can work from home like 2 days a week anyway. So it's not really that big of a shift.
Oh, well. But
I know I'm in a unique spot.
Yeah, I get it. How about you, Mongoose? Are you working from home? Are you?
Yes. Yeah, we went to indefinite work from home last Monday. We had the option to work from home whenever you felt it was necessary, but frankly, so much of my stuff is on the phone. It doesn't really necessarily matter. But it's been. I work for a logistics railroad, so this has been a crazy time for us. So it's. I've been more productive. But it's come at a massive cost, so
yeah,
it's exhausting.
I can imagine that, like I said, the world's crazy right now. It's I don't want to get, we try and avoid politics too much in Rebel, but obviously we can't ignore the fact that, you know, this is going on. This is too, it's too much of a thing, right? Like, So I do like to check in with people to see how they're doing and stuff. And I do hope that everyone listening is doing well, guys. Cause yeah, like I said, don't go outside. Don't go to the beach. You stupid Brits. I don't know if you saw this, but the announcement was... Yeah. It was kind of a suggestion on Friday that we should stay indoors. And we had the best weekend weather of the entire year. And, like, everyone went to Wales or the beach.
And it was Seattle like, had the same thing happen.
It was like, guys, like he, I know it was a suggestion, but, like, you really should. And now it's not a suggestion anymore. So thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Anyway... let's get away from all that. Let's talk about Blood Bowl. I've played 2 games since the last time we spoke, and one of them was against Andy Davo.
How'd that go?
I lost.
But
I only lost
because you didn't have a big guy.
No, it was no, but also yes, but no, really, it was because in the first half on my drive, like the first thing he did, because I don't have any tackle on my team, he put 3 Blodge Vampires on the line. And I threw 20 dice on my first turn without 1 pow. And I even had a bribe and a dirty player. So I was like, I don't care if I don't break armor when you go down. I will foul anything that hits the floor because there's vampires on the front line, right? Like, this is how this is rolling. Not one knockdown.
Did you invest your blitz into the vampires too?
I invested a werewolf blitz into the vampires.
Oh my gosh. Why didn't you go for a thrall?
Because I couldn't, because he had 2 more vampires at the back. Like, this is like a 5-vampire team.
Yikes.
Yeah, no, there was no choice. It was hit the vampires, that's all you've got, kind of thing. So it was like, no damage. And then every single block he took for the entire first 6 or 7 turns broke armor. Like, well, I had course, thralls.
All the dice were wasted on blocks that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I had thralls punching flesh golems and just, like, one dice powering flesh golems into stuns. I was just sat there going, how do I win this game anymore? Like, he even mucked up his attack on my cage because I was running out of players. I had players, like, dropping like flies. Four zombies were gone by about turn three. And my bribe. And I had a player sent off. One of them was sent off because I got called back-to-back fouls because of course. And yeah, he had an attack on the ball with a wrestle tackle guy and a block tackle guy, and it was on a ghoul. And instead of setting up a two dice, he even took a one dice and found a power. That's the game we were playing. Yeah, like the first half just went to hell.
Yeah.
Was this the classic bloodlustless vampire game, or?
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of that. There wasn't. I think the first piece of damage I did was him bloodlusting and KOing a player.
Yeah,
dang.
But you know what? The game went on and it changed a little bit, and then I killed his pom block pom vampire with my werewolf.
Nice.
And it was dead. Apo dead. No regen. So it was like. Big slaps. so that sucked. And then my flesh golem ran up. My good old flesh golem tax evasion ran up and boxed the ears of his strength 4 thrall and killed that too. So really, who lost that game? Is all I'm saying. Like, it might have been a 2-1 to him, but who lost? Really?
I like that you call the golem slap in the ears. Like, that's exactly what the animation is.
It just runs up and boxes their ears. It's like, it's class. Yeah. I love it so much. But yeah, it was
straight
just...
Straight out of Sherlock.
Yeah. It is. That's exactly what I think every time I see that animation. Robert Downey Jr. slapping the guy on the sides of the head. So yeah. So I'm taking it as a moral victory because I still have a team.
That's something.
And I mean, there's only two players, but I mean, it's the strength 4 thrall, which is not nothing. And it was a pom block vampire, which is like a level four vamp, which is again not nothing.
No, that's huge. No, because that's weeks of development to get to that point. Plus, I imagine he had plans for that one.
Well, needless to say, he was quite sad.
Yeah,
it was one of the saddest victories I think Andy Davo has taken away from Rebel. And I did feel a little bit bad, except for the dice in the first half just made me go, you know what, I don't feel that bad, really.
Those are the games where you ask yourself, would I have rather taken the loss than lose players just if I could go back and re-offer something?
Yeah, no, I get that. Like, would you have played so aggressively if you knew you were going to lose? Especially because, like, I'm in training grounds, right? There's no playoffs for me. Maybe I can get a Challenger Cup ticket. I'm not going in there to win anyway. I'm going in there to get as much SPP as humanly possible. So I don't care. I don't care about
the team. Careful, don't start colluding now.
Well, I mean, I was trying to win because winning gets you rerolls on your gold and it gets you +1 on your gold roll.
Oh no, apparently just saying that you would want to get as much SPP as possible is definitely colluding.
Maybe. Well,
Mongoose, tell us about your most recent game.
You know, alright, you know what, if I'm colluding, come on, strike me, I dare you.
So, most recent game was, it was a cost. I played Last Place Steak Mittens. Great guy.
I watched that game. But,
yeah, strength 2 Pestigore legend, decided to do work, and I came at a massive cost, so I, frankly, it went pretty well. He played outstanding in the first half, and I went for damage. He made it very difficult. Had a good wizard. I had to do some baloney with my bull that I gave Sure Hands in its first season, and then it worked. And he had a 5+ pickup and was able to run away from the slow Nurgle team. I think I had him down to 3 players by the end of the first half.
I've got to say,
second half was a different story.
I like Steak Mittens a lot. He's a lovely, lovely fella, but he's just he is absolutely allergic to trying hard at Blood Bowl, and he'll say that himself. He doesn't. He's here to have fun. He's the perfect Imperium opponent. Like when you play in Imperium, you're guaranteed to have a good match. But when you play him in Rel, it somewhat feels like you're trying as hard as humanly possible, and he's going, this'll be fun.
Yeah, and honestly, yeah. His careless nature helped him in this game. I mean, kind of daring me to focus on the strength to legend ended up benefiting him massively, because I think I claw palmed him at least 3 or 4 times, nothing. And then that comes at a cost later, because if you don't get removals, then you really lose your advantage against a team that has more strength than you do.
Yeah, yeah. He had at one point a Claw Mighty Blow block, and it was like a 1 die or whatever. And instead of taking it, or no, it was a 2 die.
It was, yeah.
And instead of taking it, he did a 3+ dodge out.
Yes.
And I was like, wait, what? And then the very next turn, he just obliterates your team. And I'm like, okay, so by not maximizing his blocks, he actually got better results.
Well, so the turn before that, if I remember correctly, he has a strength 5 Claw Mighty Blow block. Really awesome. And I focused a lot of time on it because it has guard and it's so painful to get rid of it. So I used my Dauntless, Claw, Mighty Blow, piling on Chorf blocker. I got the dice. Just a push skull or something. It didn't matter. So I agreed, rerolled it just, I think, out of fear. I always say this, everybody who greeds should be punished. That should be the rule, but I couldn't help myself. And it goes into 1 and 9, and then his very next block with that same strength 5 guy was the death into death level 6.
Ooh.
Chorf. So, yep. It came at a cost.
And Nurgle, that's a big one. I didn't ever mind playing Chorfs as Nurgle, because, yeah, they're a bit scary if the claw gets working, but you've got such a strength advantage. Like, because you're both building your players pretty much the same kind of way, right?
That's right.
Like, you're going for lots of guard, you're going for claw, you're going for mighty blow, but you've got strength 4, you've got regeneration, you've got foul appearance, so yeah. It's just, and you've got a beast of Nurgle kicking around, and they won't have the Minotaur, so they lose the strength from that. It all comes down to good dice and aggressive. I think, is the word aggressive or just tactical use of the bulls. I didn't want to say intelligent because that makes it sound like anyone who loses that match wasn't smart, and I don't think that's the case at all, because it's a hard match to win, but it's certainly, you've got to be so on point with your bull positioning and stuff, because you need that strength 4 so badly.
Yeah, and so much of kill team play, and you know, frankly, and that's what my Chaos Dwarf team is. I mean, you get as much claw as you get, you take what it's given to you. So I had to get removals to compete against that amount of strength, and it fell off in the second half. And I mean, and Fed, you said you watched it. I mean, I don't know if there was too much I could have done differently in the second half. If you don't get removals and the other guy does, that it is what it is at that point, and it's going to come at a cost. So
yeah, there's two ways to play that kind of a bash matchup, which is to do the limit the blocks that I take, or to clump up and just play the guard and remove game. And you guys kind of got into just one giant scrum, and as soon as, like, it looked favorable to you at first because you had the guard and the stand firm in all the right places, but just slowly over time he was able to kind of shift the puzzle pieces around to where all of a sudden he had the numbers and the guard, and there was very little that was left for you to do.
Yeah.
I feel like it would have been against your nature, but had you stayed a little more spread out and more, like, you were committing bulls into, like, locking them in the positions, whereas if you were more playing the map, you might have been able to threaten the ball, which would have required him to have more players out of the scrum. And then that reduces the amount of blocks, which reduces the attrition, and it kind of puts him more in a position with a force dice. That's the only other way I could have seen it played, but had you played it your way, it was just as likely to have worked, and you know, you could have got the removals and suddenly won 2-0. So.
Yeah, and that's good feedback, because you know, like, you look at it differently, and you know, and I always try to look at it like as a learning opportunity. Like, you know, I thought Stigman's played really well. I thought he made good. He didn't make mistakes, other than the ones that we think are funny, but like, you know, he didn't make major errors that I And then, you know, if you take, you say this for most people, if you take 4 casualties and 3 deaths and a half, I mean, it's going to be, anybody's going to have trouble winning.
Right. So. Well, and there's no correct answer per se, because even if you play the control game and you force your opponent to make bad dice, they can still roll the 5+ and win.
Yeah, well said.
And so that gets a little tricky, like, if you are trying to go that route. But you have the options for both with your team. So
I've got to say, it's one of the things I personally disliked about playing Nurgle, was I found that some matchups, you know, were interesting. Like, it was always fun, I think, playing elves. And everyone's going to go, oh, you love beating up the elves. It's not that. That was actually tactical. You know, the positioning was super important. You couldn't overcommit to a fight. You had to know where you could go in, where you had to hold back, where you had to put your key positionals and things like that. I really enjoyed the tactical threat of that with Nurgle. But when you came across, like, a Chaos Dwarf team or a Chaos team or another Nurgle team, it's like, essentially, the game will always eventually come down to 2 death balls hitting each other really hard in the middle of the pitch at some point.
Have to.
And have to. When you get there, it doesn't have to, but it almost always does. Because you'll think you've got an advantage and go, this is my time. Because, you know, there is a point with a kill team where you go, this is my time to commit, because I've got the strength advantage here, I'm going to win the fight. Or they'll think the same thing and go, well, it's my time to commit, because I've got the advantage. And one of you will start putting pressure on. Either that, or you have this long standoff where you stare at each other and everyone goes, ooh. And you just trade blitzes. But whenever it comes down to that death ball, there's the tactics and strategy and who's the best player goes out the window. If you hit 2 death balls together,
it certainly can.
It's just who can roll the hottest dice at the time.
That's the problem with that, right? So, like, if I'm playing stake mittens in a bash on bash mirror, I'm going to avoid that death ball as long as I possibly can, and try and make it as unfavorable to him as possible, because I know that's his best chance of winning the game.
No, and you're right. And I did the opposite. I thought in my mind, which was, I have 3 more guard than he does. I have more claw mighty blow piling on than he does. Bring on the fight and we'll see what happens. And that, in this case, it, you know, hindsight 2020, that was the wrong move. Like, it just, if I had known the outcome then, you know, I would have thought about it differently. But, you know, you think in your mind.
But again, it's so easy to look at that matchup.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. I'm sure there's certain viewers, listeners who don't want to hear about it, but look at the Sage versus Jimmy Fantastic game from last week, right? Like, on paper, Sage didn't, you know, Sage shouldn't have walked out of that match with the team on paper, because Jimmy Fantastic's team is truly terrifying if you can't run away from it, evade it, get around it, get away from it, stop it from basing you. But honestly, like, sometimes you just go foul. It wasn't even claw. Claw, Sage's claw did nothing. It was knocking players down and then just fouling them, you know, one by one, like, without giving any, like, pause, any, you know, there was no mercy, there was no quarter given. It was just foul, dead player, foul, dead player, foul, dead player, just over and over for the entire match. It was brutal. But that's just the nature of playing one of these kill teams. And when you run into another kill team, like, eventually the meat is going to hit the steel, and it's all about, like, whose dice are the hottest when it happens.
Well, yeah. I think it's a reminder too of, I think, the how much people, I think, undervalue dirty
player. I love dirty player.
I still think I think dirty player is valuable in every team, regardless of what style you play, just to have it as a threat. Because one of the issues I had with his piling on, like, he had taken out my dirty player in the first half, and, you know, so I didn't have one. And then it limits, you know, like, you're like, oh, is it really even worth it to do, like, a, you know, just a random foul at it? But it so much discourages people from just attacking, and it can make such a difference.
It's a two-edged sword, though. Like, I absolutely will pile on and make a blitz to one side of the pitch to draw the foul, which gives me room on the other side of the pitch, and occasionally gives me a send-off. So I'll transition over to my game this week. I played Rolling Red and the Fogmire Fen Beasts, which are a Lizard team. I was nervous about this match, mostly because Lizards are not a good matchup for Skaven. You can go after the Skinks, but if the Saurus and they get inducements, if there's enough Saurus and inducements, it gets really nasty. And I thought it was going to be bad because I was down 3 players by turn 2. But
Skaven life.
inducements did things, and I was able to get a 4-0 win.
Oh, good.
But the reason it turned around, yes, Fez Glitch, and I've stopped running bribes because every time I bribe, I get a turn one snake into a failed bribe. So it's happened 3 times in the
past. Does that mean you've given up wizards as well? Because I think you're at, 0-5?
Getting there. So, of course, the wizard does pop out and also fails 5 in a row.
God bless it.
How does that happen? I've never seen this in my life.
It's so ridiculous. So anyway, even without the bolt working, I'm still able to turn the ball over. But it all switched because I was down 3 players. So I just said, okay, I have to pile on this blitz no matter what. And I pile on and I don't get the removal. But Fogmire Finbeast have a dirty player skink. And so, of course, the message is very clear that I am going to be getting fouled every time I pile on. And sure enough, he brings over players to do the pylon, and that leaves my other gutter runners free to sack the ball, get the ball, dodge out, and score. And then all of a sudden, the Soros armor just collapsed, and I was removing Soros with Fez Glitch. I was removing Soros with non-mighty blow hits. I was removing Soros with Glart. I think Glart had 2 casualties.
That's fair. Glart doesn't get casualties. Glart is like, he's a KO machine, man.
Yeah, he was wrecking them. And he, I think, removed a Crocs, too.
Oh, jeez.
So, that's how you get a 4-0 win.
I do love me some Glart. Oh, that is a juicy one.
I have to say, right, speaking of, like, Skaven into lizards and the lizards collapsing, I'm sure, like, a few of our veteran coaches will remember my original Skaven team with Julius Cheesa. I'm famous for entirely one thing, which was destroying Kedgeruza's lizard team the match before he went to playoffs. Which I remind Kedgeruza of at every possible opportunity. It's only funny because I'm in an Imperium tournament at the moment. Because Haringzord took my advice and we went for... Remember that we went with the kill players to steal their skills kind of thematic. So we had Chorfy, and then we had Trolliver, when it was like, you basically got to build your own Chorf blocker in Imperium, or you got to build your own Troll by killing every player they injured or killed, like, permanently injured. So it had to be like a perm that didn't get apoed or regened. They could take one of their skills, and every match that you won, you could open a random skill pack and apply one to your player as well. So, and eventually, at the end of the tournament, you got to keep whatever you built. So it's so much fun. It's like Imperium, right? Well, I suggested to Haringzord he should, because Minotaurs have a belt that looks like the Headhunter leather belt, which does something similar in Path of Exile, where you kill your opponents and you get their buffs to make yourself stronger. And I was like, Minotaurs are wearing this belt. They would be perfect for that tournament just because it's on theme, right? They're wearing this Headhunter belt. It's just perfect. Haringzord, do it. And he went, all right, then I will. And he's released... it filled up. It was 8 minutes per tournament to fill up. 8-man tournaments. So we've got Finnathor, Vinathor, and Uncle Brynathor. Or Uncle Brynathor, I suppose. Depends how you pronounce Minotaur. It's either Minotaur or Minotaur. He put you into different groups depending on how you pronounced it. But each one, so it's like 24 players in 8 minutes, 8 minutes, and then 8 minutes again. It's nuts. Like, Imperium tournaments are so popular when they've got these really silly, cool thematics. But the reason I'm talking about any of this is because I want to mention Imperium briefly, but also because 2 of my 7 opponents in my Minotaur matchup have Julius Cheesa.
Come back to haunt you.
So comes back to haunt me twice. There's 2 of them now. This is ridiculous. It was Zinge played has got one of them, and he sent me the screenshot of the match, and it was like Julius Cheesa died. So it was Big Easy TP killed Julius, or was it Big E? No, it was Big Easy's Julius and Zinge killed him. I do apologize. So that was, he killed him with his Minotaur as well. So he got to take Claw from him. And Zinge sent the dice log, and it was 3 skulls, 2 pushes, and 1 pow. And I was like, yeah, that's Julius. That's exactly Julius right there. Just zero good dice, right? And then he died. So yeah, fun times. I just thought it was funny because Skaven versus Lizards always reminds me of Pua Kedjeru who's not having a team.
It happens every once in a while.
But yeah, good win then. So are you in playoff challenger?
So where are 2A is still like just the most ridiculously tight competition. So all the way down to 6th place can still end up in 1st place.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty close. I'm at 23 points tied with Big Chuck, and then 22 points is Too Awesome. 21 points is Fiction. 20 points is Luminous, as well as Duberman. So it's anybody's chance, basically, to take the division. There are 3 playoff spots and 1 Challenger Cup spot. So and there's a bunch of matches still to be played between all of those 6 people. I play Too Awesome for the final week, and that's probably going to be for a playoff spot. And depending on where we shake up the week before, that the loser probably gets the Challenger Cup spot. And then Fiction has to go through, I think, Too Awesome this week. And Lumi's got a good shot. Big Chuck has to play, I think, Lumi and Duberman. It's all very, very, very close and a nail biter. I'm not sure at all how it's gonna play out.
Sounds good, man. Sounds
No, it's fun drama. I've been keeping up with you guys just because it's so interesting to watch how the board changes.
So yeah, and you're like you say, you're in the running too, right, Mongoose? You're close to the top.
Yes, I'm in. As of today, I'm in 4th place with 20. And then you got Travel and Staticus are right above me with 22 and 23. And then behind us in 5th and 6th is Ramoset and Red Joker with 16 and 15. So I'm in an interesting cushion, but I play Ramoset last week of the season, so it may depend.
And I know Ramoset's hungry to make it back to playoffs again, because he's no stranger to it. He's been there a couple of times from both G-Man and Rel, I believe. Has he qualified through Rel Super Fed, or is he just...
I believe it was just G-Man, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I know he's done it through G-Man. I just couldn't remember if he'd been there from your side of the ocean as well. So I know he'll be hungry. I know he'll be hungry to get back. So there's going to be no letting up is the argument.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a little battered. Some of his amazing pieces aren't around anymore, which is good for me. But
no, they died to elves.
Yes. Yeah, it's I'm in a comfortable position, as in I feel confident because I really just need one win out of the next 2. But that's also why it scares me.
Yeah, but you can't ever think like that, can you? You can't put your feet back and go, yeah, it's fine. Yeah. I only need one win.
Yeah, plus
you're not
plus,
locked until you're locked.
Yeah, plus even if you're locked, you know, like I said, you know, I can't take the loss the ties like I just had if it's going to come at the expense of the players you need for playoffs. So we'll see.
That's true as well. Yeah, it's a really scary position because you're like, I've got to push as hard as I can, but I've got to make sure I've got a team, and that's why I'm kind of sat here going, I'm just playing Improving Grounds, dude. It's fine. I'm killing other. No. I played Kislev. I've killed 4 players in 2 weeks. So I've actually got a 16 man team at the moment thanks to Pokemon.
I'm excited because I'm up to 6 players, so I don't know what you're talking about winning versus having Woo. A team.
You don't get the choice. You don't. You just got to win.
Pretty much.
Yeah, see, and I'm aiming towards Fed's level, where at this point, and I've always played this way, but I will murder every player just to make the playoffs if that's what it takes. But we'll see what happens once if I can get there.
Yeah, I want to give. Sorry,
we've had Shorfs that have not had like the best developed team also go very deep in the playoffs. So I think people underestimate how good they are even when down TV, because they're very efficient and there are some decent inducements for them as well.
Yes,
and you know, all you really need is one good killer to go on a tear in a match, and it can absolutely be a game changer, right? Like,
yep, killer.
Now, I know we were not doing like 2 games each, but I want to give quick credit to my opponent this week in G-Man as well, Azenth. I don't know if you listen to the podcast, but he was a little bit down because he's had a bit of a rough season, and I killed two players in two turns, and he was a bit like, oh man, I'm getting mauled kind of thing. It was a rookie lineman, and it was a lineman with wrestle. He was playing Kislev, but I just wanted to give him credit because I think it's super important to mention this. He's one of the first players I've ever seen set up for a one turn with no reroll as well. So credit where it's due. He really had to like put it in to attempt the reroll with no rerolls or anything. It's created the one turn with no rerolls and things. He got a quick snap and didn't muck up his setup. He actually used the quick snap, and I'm sat there going, oh my god. Like, he set up flawlessly off the back of this quick snap, and then everything went perfect. And I've never been happier because, like, you know when you used to see the quick snap come in and you're like, just don't, if you don't know what you're doing, just stick with your original plan kind of thing. Because we've seen so many times in like playoffs and stuff, people get a quick snap and then just destroy their own positioning.
It's so funny when that happens too, because it's like, no, that event should help you. It really should help you with your one turn, but people screw it up every time.
Yeah, well, I wanted to give credit where it's due for his end, because he didn't. And frankly, yeah, it was a really nice one turn attempt. It was really well put together, and it did require...
he actually score the one turn?
He did, yeah. I got a draw 2-2 off the back of him just pulling nice. A brilliant one turn.
Wow.
Otherwise, look, I would have probably won.
Kislev pulling off results and dying in the process.
It's a Kislev. It's a Kislev life. It is worthy of note. He did set up he pressured me so hard, took the ball off me, and then I just went, again, this was the point my daughter walked in and went, you should just do this. And I was like, I can't just do that. And then I set up a really fancy player and then just charged a flesh golem at his catcher with the ball, rolled a pow, followed up and caught the scatter on the flesh golem. And I was just like, yeah, we're getting a flesh golem TD here. Because at this point, he can't stop. You know, he's not got the strength because he was down numbers and I'd KO'd his bear. And it was like, yeah, you cannot take the ball off a flesh golem now. And it was just like, so sometimes just charging at the ball and sacking the ball does work out well.
That's good.
But it was a good game. It was a 2-2, but it was relevant to me because I saw a quick snap where he didn't screw up and ruin his setup. Now, I can't believe, and I Little Bird's told me some info. I've been keeping my ear to the ground, and I know something's happened around Rebel in the last couple of weeks.
You're going to say you and can't I believe I haven't said anything?
Can't believe it's been 42 minutes without Superfed mentioning this. Go on, tell everybody.
I was saying, so news around Rebel. I did win the Perpetual Ladder for Rebel, the inaugural season of it. So it's been a while since I've won a Rebel thing. I haven't won anything Rebel-related since the second season of Miners. So it's been a while. But yeah, it was a good win for the MoFo's Necro team that you and I played our first match against each other.
Do you have Mighty Blow yet?
With no, on a werewolf, I still do not have Mighty Blow. Turns out Necro are so good, you don't even need Mighty Blow on a werewolf. They're just that much better when you have it.
But I would argue the opposite. My Mighty Blow Werewolf is actually awful. It's so bad. You need to put Mighty Blow... The key I've learned is you need to put Mighty Blow on Flesh Golems.
I wish I could have a Flesh Golem last that long. I've had to cycle through 3 Flesh Golems on that team. Maybe this I actually is... won. I won the playoffs with 1 Flesh Golem. Yeah. Oh, that was a thing.
Super bad.
And he got really cheeky with the inducements as well. He fired. He was down to like 7 Dark Elves at the start of the match, like coming into it before Journeyman. And we were going to be at a difference of 10K TV in my favor. And I had a cheerleader.
Okay,
and a
so coach, who were you so, playing? Because it was.
Tap Comet. And so Tap Comet from G Man and his Dark Elves.
Because I know you and, were playing Jeff in the semis, right?
Yeah, I beat Jeff in the semis, and Jeff was the number 2 team going in.
I'm so sad. Jeff really wanted me to cast that game, but like I say, with everything going on, and the missus was sick at the time, and like I just couldn't get away to cast it, but I so wanted to cast that game. Because it was and a bit of a grudge match, I understood.
Yeah, we had played 3 previous times, or 2 previous times, and so he won the first one, which was my only loss on the Perpetual Ladder, and then I won the second one. So we were trying to see who was going to get the best of 3 for the season and that one. And then the finals were cast by T-Self and let's say practical snow. So thanks for casting that, guys.
Have you gone back and watched the cast?
Yeah, I went back. Not that night, but the next night, I think it was. Caught what I could. So that was interesting. But I the match itself, I guess we'll talk through a little bit of it, was really interesting because turn one, he won the toss and put me on offense. And I made a blitz with my white. And I wanted to make one GFI in order to get my white back behind the zombie line. And I failed it. And I thought about rerolling it, but it was turn one. And I thought I was in a pretty good spot. My ghoul had the ball basically in my end zone. He had a high kick and just caught it. And so I'm like, you know, it's fine. And Tap Comet went full pressure, pedal to the metal at that moment because I didn't reroll that GFI, punched his way through the zombie line and flooded my backfield. And the next turn, I couldn't knock any of the elves over. So I'm feeling a lot of pressure at this point. So rather than go forward with the ghoul and try and like roll a bunch of GFIs to cage, I kept the ghoul on the end zone line and I started bringing people back. This led to me getting based in the corner and threatening the surf, all kinds of just nastiness, and I just barely managed to get out. I used the ghoul to ball carrier surf, and I don't get punished because he didn't attempt the cage dive. But he had a leaper, too, so I was just all kinds of daring him to roll the dice, and thankfully he didn't. And then managed to get out and get down the pitch. And then the removals finally came. And the second half, he was down maybe five elves. And at that point, it was pretty much over. Because I still had a bribe? Some kind of inducement at that point.
Yeah, I get it.
It was funny. But yeah.
Ooh, one thing I forgot to mention. I'm going to bring it back up. I'm going to make it more about me. Because, goddammit, I forgot to tell you. I didn't... One of the things about the Andy Davo game... Like, obviously, everything went wrong. And I had... He took the ball. He sacked the ball and it was on the floor. But my ghoul was in, like, a position... Basically, I was just looking at it going, you know when you've only got bad choices? You go, well, maybe I just need to do this. So I dodged my werewolf out, failed the dodge, re-rolled, passed the dodge, uphilled a vampire, rolled a push skull, re-rolled it to push-push, and then got push-push again... Shoved him out the way. And then I'm looking at this pitch situation. And I'm down men. And the ball's on the floor in two vampire tackle zones. And my ghoul's marked. My ghoul's knocked down and marked. So I just look at the situation and go, I've got nothing to lose. I'm going to lose this drive if I don't do something magical now. So I dodge my ghoul away from tackle. Succeed. Pick up the ball in two vampire tackle zones on a 5+. Succeed. Dodge back out of the vampire tackle zones. Do a 4+ pass with the ghoul. Over the head of two thralls who don't intercept, into the waiting hands of a flesh golem.
Oh, wow. I think...
I've been assured that Andy's reaction is priceless. My immediate response, as soon as I saw the flesh golem catch it, I just hit enter, open chat, and hit him with modern problems require modern solutions.
It's the most, like... best and the worst part about the game, right? When like you've put your opponent in such a bad position that they have no choice but to roll the bad dice. And so then you're like, wait, they could roll the bad dice and succeed. And that just drains you because you've put them like you put forth so much effort
and yeah, you
like,
sat there looking at a pitch willpower. I've won this drive.
Right.
There's nothing. And then more you they can just do.
Get the dice. And you're like, oh.
But I mean, there's a certain point to look being able to... I would argue there's a certain ability to look at the situation and go, I have to do this. A lot of coaches pulled the werewolf out, pulled the ghoul out, tried to mark the ball, and hoped you just make the vampires fail.
Right. I don't want to fail. I want my opponent to fail, even though at that point it's the wrong decision. Because... you know, it's not that hard for them to, like, it's harder for them to fail than it is for you to fail. And you don't want to play around that. Like, your victory condition is definitely making the riskier play than trying to be safe and force your opponent into a risky play.
And all I'm saying is, remember a few episodes back, listeners, and I'm sure, like, Mongoose, I believe, is an avid listener, so I'm sure he'll remember this. As my witness, Mongoose, remember when Superfed said, if you're willing to roll the 5+, suddenly he's very interested?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and honestly, and I always thought that was the best advice, because the best coaches know the right time to cage dive. It's not cage diving every time to see if you get a 5. It's knowing when's the time that you need to do it, because too often, the worst thing you can do is not cage dive and just, like, knock off a corner and make no attempt. Like, something that's really easy to defend in the next turn. Because now you just went for, like, something that's easily defensible. If you can make a risky decision, that's what wins you games.
Metal's basically pandering to try and get on the top 40 is what I'm
saying. There's only 8 spots left, goddammit! I need to scratch my way into the consideration is all I'm saying.
If you had beat Andy, I think that would be, you know, the start of some good credentials.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
God damn it.
See, and back in that
you pulled off the play, but you still didn't even win.
Well, no, because of course I didn't. Because you know what you did next turn? Double piled my flesh golem. Like, God.
Yeah.
Because of course you didn't. You know when people tell you when you like buy a necro team that flesh golems are brilliant at like being pillars and holding the line, and they'll stand there and they'll frustrate your opponents and they'll defend, and
that never happens.
No, they just never happens. Yeah, everyone sells you these things as being the pillars of your team that are gonna do magical work and hold players down forever. And you've seen hinder dejection, so you know it can happen.
What happens in reality is they get knocked over, and the first time they touch the ground, they get knocked out.
A bloody yes. lineman looks at them, and a power appears somewhere on a dice somewhere. It's like, it's not even the lineman who rolled it. It's just looking at a flesh golem gives you a power. It's so stupid.
It's the strongest piece you have that you assume is the most fragile, or at least it feels that way. Like, every hit they take, you just know.
The only AV9 on the team. But it is less durable than a zombie.
Doesn't matter if they have Mighty Blow, Claw, anything. You just know this next one, this will be his last.
Yeah.
There's a block coming, and it's going to be bad for him. <It's> like... And they've got such good touchdown dancers as well. They absolutely boogie with it. So that's pretty cool. But you never get to see it because they're always knocked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else going on Rebel? Have I missed much? It's been 2 weeks, so something must have happened.
Yeah, I mean, the second season of the Perpetual Ladder is now live. And, you know, there's a lot more games getting played because I think more people are quarantined and available to play games. So if you're looking for something to do, I would check out the Perpetual Ladder if you're not into the Imperium shenanigans. And if you're looking for more shenanigans, then you should play in the Imperium. They're doing a ton of tournaments right now.
Yeah, Haringzod's working like double time to keep stuff off. He had the Khorne.
You should pay him more, you know? Maybe give him a raise.
Shall I double his wages again?
I think you should.
Alright, Haringzod, your wages have been doubled again. In fact, you know what? We've got the Patreon now. Let's triple Haringzod's wages. It's fine.
Just like that. Just
good
like
idea. That.
Triple zero, still zero. Mongoose.
He's earned it.
That's the golden rule.
Is that how it comes out?
Yeah. Never multiply, never divide by zero, and always always multiply by zero. That's the Rebel rules. no, but he did a one-day, he did the first ever one-day tournament for Imperium. Last weekend, I want to say? Mother's Day weekend. Yeah, last weekend. He did a Imperium one-day tournament, and it was like every player had Frenzy, because it was like a Khorne-themed.
That's pretty awesome.
So every single player that on every team got given Frenzy as standard. No matter what positional or player they were, everyone got given Frenzy.
Oh, that's great.
It was funny. It was, you know, I only caught bits of it, but every time you did, there was like the minute of like watching people think about the players, because you can't just go, oh, it's a 2-dice block, because it isn't always just a 2-dice block, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, Khemri Frenzy would be awesome.
Tomb Guardian Frenzy. Yeah, there was other rules as well. But I don't know who won, because Haringzod never tells me these things. So I'll find out for next episode who won, and we'll shout them out on the podcast as the first ever Imperium Wonder Tawny champion. But I thought it was cool. And we're trying our best to give people stuff to do, obviously. So if you got any more ideas, guys, like submit them to your nearest friendly admin. Most of us are quite friendly. Last time I checked. Anything else, Fed? Anything else happening?
I think that's it.
We're getting pretty close to playoffs.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It is nearly that time.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Playoffs are not going to be suspended due to the coronavirus.
No, but my casting of the playoffs, mate. Like I said, less free time means casting's going to be much harder for me.
Sure.
Hopefully it opens up opportunities for others, though, that are looking to shine.
Yeah, like, if you are, like, a sports reporter or have been interested in casting or co-casting, you've got to work a mic, you can hold a coherent conversation.
Now is literally the time. As you see matches that are going to define who goes to the playoffs, now would be a great time for you to set up your streams, get comfortable with it, make sure that you've got your VOD set to be saved
on Twitch. That's a super important one.
you know, those are the things that you want to see right now, so that when we are getting people, you know, all organized for who's covering what games and things like that, we can refer to one of your VODs and make sure that you are set and good to go. Otherwise, you know, there's going to be obviously priority. I imagine this might be the first playoff where we actually have a surplus of people wanting to cast that may not be able to. That shouldn't discourage you. I mean, yeah, we'll definitely be able to fit people in, but just as far as like what channel is going to be hosting it.
Hosting might be a bit more contested, but honestly, like, a lot of people say, I want to get involved, but I can't stream right now. I don't have the rig, I don't have the internet, I don't have the, you know, the setup right now. My PC is not strong enough to stream, because it does, you know, it does require something. It's not, you know, you can't just stream with nothing, right? Like, I know people who play Blood Bowl on a potato, so, like, I've definitely played opponents who I think were playing on calculators.
It feels like it's working so slow.
Yeah, and if people are looking to start, they should start with the end of these play-in week for the Division 5s, because, I mean, those races are super exciting. I mean, it's one of the best things that Rebel has right now, are these play-ins. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's felt a really good time as well with everything going on, too. But as Mongo says as well, like, this is the great time to get involved, because there's so many interesting games happening that you can, like, cut your teeth on and practice. And I'm telling you, right, if you tune into Twitch and you see someone streaming a random Rebel game, then they're like, T-Self, for example, is super good at this. If he's got free time, he'll just pick up a couple of random Rel games and stream them and cast over them. I'm telling you, he is unlikely to say, no, you can't come and co-cast with me. If you just go, hey, T-Self, do you want some company? Like, if you want to get involved in casting, that's the way to do it. Is just go to one of the guys who's been doing it for a while, who's comfortable in their setup, who's comfortable working with, like, a variety of other people. T-Self is the first one to come to mind. There's Crusader for the Big O. Haringzord is very much... He's got his system down, but he can basically cast with anyone. I know that. And he does random streams. My Stairs occasionally picks up casting of streams. I'm trying to think, who else suit fed on the Rel side? Because usually that's after I've gone to bed.
Practical Snow, I've seen Michael's cast a few. Usually people cast their own, like Mistaze and Sace will cast his own.
True Blue is a great show.
True Blue is another one, yeah. Just scrolling through the list here.
If you see them streaming someone, obviously if you see them streaming their own game, it's really much better to not get involved in voice if it's their match. Because, you know, the last
thing you do is... third-party streaming is not fun for, you know, following the rules and such. But, yeah, I don't know.
I'm telling you, most of our sports supporters are pretty friendly people who, if you see them, you could just go, look, I really want to get some experience casting. Drop them a message and go, are you free one evening this week? Could we maybe find a game to cast so I can practice?
That's a good idea.
It's the best time to do it because everyone's indoors anywhere. Unless they
Easiest thing to do is just literally pull up Blood Bowl when you've got a couple hours to spare. Pull a not quite Friday night Rebel, but just whatever night or day of the week it is. Pull up Blood Bowl 2, search for live Rebel games, and jump into one.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way to just hop in and go.
And then, try and make sure that they're not streaming their own game, obviously, on their Twitch channel, because it's kind of rude taking views away from that, unless it's a playoff game where we have our own rules where we always cast every playoff game, don't try and go head to head with someone who's streaming their own game. That's a bit.
And you know, if you're gonna do something like that, you just don't want to announce it in the Discord where you're actually taking views away, possibly. But because sometimes people may stream their own games, but still want to have that third party perspective to watch after the game.
Again, I think it just comes down feedback. To communication, right? Just talk to them.
Right. Exactly.
Like, I'd be super interested. Obviously, you know, it was super interesting when we interviewed Mongoose. I'd be interested to get Mongoose on a couple of the, you know, at least the earlier on casts when he can, if he's interested in.
Yes. No, I would love to. I tried to do casting a while back, and then I found out my computer can barely handle the graphic quality of Blood Bowl when it gets casted, so it looked horrible. So then that ended that dream.
But you can still co-cast.
I'd be happy to. Be happy to co-cast.
I know we've had a couple of audio crackles tonight. It's not been too offensive, so I don't know if it's your net is a little bit slow at the moment. To be honest, I don't know if there's issues with the net being. Obviously, the huge amount of people working from home now. I don't know if we're going to see issues with internet providers, you know, struggling to keep up with the extra pressure.
Apparently, Italy's putting on restrictions on it. They told us that because they think it could come to the state because of the massive bandwidth being abused or used.
Hmm. Although, on the flip-flop, I find it incredibly interesting that, like, is it AT&T have said that they're removing, like, caps for usage?
Yeah.
Data usage and stuff, and there's like, oh, we've never been able to remove caps for data usage, and then suddenly everyone has to work from home, and they're like, we've removed the caps for data usage. It's like, yeah.
I know Congress had pressured a bunch of those companies to do it. Even Comcast was pressured into removing them for the time being.
Insert that meme where it's the guy just going, so that was a lie.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Anyway, Superfed, do you want to lead us into the next segment?
Which segment? The top 40?
The top 40. I think it's time. We've alluded to it a lot already.
Alrighty, top 40. Our list so far is Thomas T, The Sage, Ornan, Motley, McMackey, Marcus, Sandu, Viking Cop, Gerber, Kedgy Ruse, Jape NZ, Stauticus, Random Boy, Luminous, Sace, G'day Nick, Arch XL, Crystal Hunter, Dirty Basher, Miss Days, Toast Guy, Horny Cricket, Superfed TV, Walkerthon, Hindi, Jimmy Fantastic, Papa Nasty, Calric, Pete Fiction, HUD, and Larkstar.
It's a bit of a rogues gallery, isn't it? It's a bit of a who's who at this point.
Yeah, it is.
and it's interesting to note that we absolutely cursed Jimmy Fantastic by putting him on the top 40 and then watching his team explode. So if you're one of the four coaches, we're going to name four tonight, four next week, and then episode 100, one of the segments will be our first ever live debate over who is removed from the list.
And who replaces them.
So that'll be spicy. That was spicy enough that I felt like we needed to accelerate to 4 and 4 so that we can nail the preliminary top 40 and get that in the 100th episode, because that should be super interesting.
Absolutely.
So if your team does, if you're one of the four coaches we're about to name and your team explodes next week, as did Jimmy's, we accept no responsibility whatsoever. Do not shop with Haringzord. You know, that's
Madden curse.
The deals on that armor are incredible. They may feel like a steal, you know. They might be to die for, but sometimes they're to die in.
I don't know if they're considered essential retail. I think Heron Zords might be closed for
tell it to Blood Bowl players. you need to gear up some linemen quickly, some journeymen quickly. Where else would you go?
I guess that's true. That would make it essential retail. So yeah, you know what? It is probably open.
It's also silly. Go on then, Superfed. Who have you got for us?
All right, I'll put two up this week. So the first one that I am going to put up is, in fact, a G-Man coach. It is Bleeding Hippie. And his basically, Bleeding Hippie has had a pretty, I would say, a very dominant record with his chorfs. I think he was one of the first Chorf coaches to actually get into playoffs as well, which is, you know, a statement to be made.
He had a lot of, like, those weird records. Like, I'm pretty sure he hit the first Chorf legend. I'm, again, pretty sure he was, for a while, the oldest Chorf team. Possibly the first Chorf team in a regional Division 1. Like, he had a lot of those. Because I think he literally re-rolled the Chorfs the season that Chorfs came out.
Yeah. Well, and he's had, I mean, a number of teams. So, he had a Nurgle team, the 99ers Reborn. He had a Chaos team, the 99ers before that, and then the first one he had, since he's been here since season one, he had Diagnose R Us, which were High Elves that he was playing in G-Man 1. So he's been around a while. Then he did Amazing Strippers, is the new Amazon team that he's playing.
What Elf?
Which is currently... Okay. What Elf?
Yeah, not Amazon, What Elf.
Oh, see, that I fell for that. Amazing Strippers seems like it would be an Amazon name.
Do you want to know an interesting fact? I do believe that High Elf team you referenced is the only team of Bleeding Hippies that he's played in G-Man that I haven't played against. Just a random...
It's funny.
I remember the Chaos one, because that Chaos team was cursed. He had a Minotaur that kept dying.
That's just doing him a favor. That doesn't sound like a curse.
Or was it the Minotaur survived and everything else died around it? That might have been the situation that happened. It was something to do with the Minotaur and death. I just can't remember which way the cookie cut. I beat his Nurgle team because I diced the life out of him. I beat his Chorf team because I diced the life out of those. And I beat his Wood Elf team because, drum roll please, I diced the life out of them. I've never had an even match against Bleeding Hippie. It's always been awful for the poor guy.
Yeah. I'm surprised he actually, like, retired the Chorf team. The Chorf team was in better shape than, honestly, your Nurgle team was at the time of being retired.
My Nurgle team was beautiful at the time I retired it. It was literally almost flawless.
Apart from Chorf team's even better shape.
Yeah. No, like, you know the problem, and I think... It was a criticism that a lot of casters levied on Hippie when he used to play, like when he made the playoffs and things. And I think it's something that he very much came to realize himself, was that he was getting complacent on the Chorfs. I don't want to necessarily say lazy, because I think that sounds quite like offensive. Like, you're bad because you would you know what I mean? I don't mean that. I mean, I think when you have a team that's that killy, you're just so used to killing everything that you do tend to play a little bit more fast and loose. And it's not necessarily laziness, but I think complacency is absolutely the term.
Hmm. Yeah, I just drilling into the play, I didn't see him play any team other than his Chorfs. But even, you know, he won all of Rebel, for those of you that don't know, with this Chorf team, and had multiple playoff runs. I think the one thing that always stood out to me was it was the ball that he was, you know, the loosest with. And he had a Agi 4 Hobgoblin with sure hands. So, like, it was not a bad ball carrier. He just wouldn't... He would devote so many resources into controlling and killing his opponent that he just often forgot about the ball until he had made all his 2-die blocks and was like, oh, yeah, I should probably do something with that. But at the end of the day... It didn't matter because he was so good at the removal and control game with his Chorfs and Bull Centaurs that he got away with it. And, you know, we're talking about all the different people that are on this list and the different ways that they play. Getting away with it is a valid way to make the list.
Well, I would say it in his defense as well. Like, I do say it made him a little complacent, like he was a bit fast and loose. But his bulls were always excellently positioned.
Yes.
And we said this was key when I was speaking to Mongoose about his game earlier. You know, if you use the bulls well, you can really turn the tide of some of the rougher Chorf matchups. And I feel like Hippie always had his bulls positioned in a place that could either cover for his maybe slight cage-averse nature, Is that the word? Is that the term? Is that the way to say it? I don't know. Cage averse? Do we go with that?
Sure. He's got a cage allergy.
Like, look, right, maybe the Hobgoblin was, like, claustrophobic, okay? So he was a really good ball carrier, but he just didn't like enclosed spaces. So when he was surrounded by these four Hobgoblins, he got four chaff blockers, he got nervous and got upset and didn't want to fumble the ball. So he was letting him enjoy the wide open spaces of the rest of the field.
I mean, whatever works, and clearly this worked.
Well, I think a knock to a good coach, too, and this is applies definitely to Hippie, is how you build your team over time. And as a Chorf coach, I mean, that's the pinnacle, is kind of what I look at it, how Hippie, because I mean, I think it's just, it was built so precisely and perfectly and organized that's part of credit to being a quality coach.
He did also have insane claw luck. Like, yes. Let's not look about. He had insane claw luck.
Imagine having two legend Chorf blockers, and one of them has no guard, and the other one has guard as his legend skill. that's ridiculous. Because, I mean, he wasn't lacking on guard. He had a guard bull centaur, which, A, I don't like, but B, was mobile and blodge and break tackle and all that. But he also had guard hobgoblins, multiple of them throughout the seasons. Like, the team was just, it was stacked. It was a stacked Chorf team. But even so, like, they were around for a long time. They were very effective. Made playoffs from G-Man Division 1 multiple times. It's definitely not a team that you can write off, or if you're making a top of Rebel list, you can't exclude Bleeding Hippie just for this team alone. And he also has been around since the very beginning, so it makes sense.
It's worthy of note. The only reason I hadn't put him on the list myself yet is because I thought he was already on the list. We were talking before the episode, and I was genuinely surprised to find that Hippie wasn't on the list. So it shows how much I pay attention when Superfed does the "this is who's on the list" list. It's a bit where I tune out and watch my second monitor. It's like, yeah, he'll get me when we get there.
Sure. All right, now who's your next coach that you
did? I just want to say as well, just to add to Bleeding Hippie, 1 second, is he is, as much as we might say he got complacent, potentially a little bit lazy with the team, when he turned it on, he's one of the most intelligent Blood Bowl players I know. When he's got his game face on, like, his ability to assess, like, the pitch situation, to read, like, the layout of how he thinks the opponent's going to play and things like that. If you've ever watched his stream or chat to him, we had him on the episode, was it about 4, 5, 6 episodes ago, something like that. He is incredibly smart, and it's so interesting, like, listening to him break down. It's almost like he reminds me a lot of Luminous in that regard. Is they're both very, very good at reading a pitch. Superfed's gone quiet because he's not going to allow the comparison to Lumi. The Lumi robot cannot be matched. I know.
So who's going to be your current pick for this week?
I think this one's going to be a bit contentious, especially because he's taking a season off. And everyone's going to instantly go, "Oh, Chet Manley," but I'm putting Infinite Pink on.
Okay.
Not least because he was the coach that ended my playoff run. But also because he's got the player I hate more than any other player in the entire history of Rebel on his team. But also because he's not only a really lovely fellow when you get the chance to sit and talk to him, he's actually a bit of a demon on the pitch. He can be a little bit prone to that kill, high TV kill coach, fast and loose and taking things for granted that you're going to murder things. But again, when he goes, "This is what I need to do to win the game," he's really good at putting it on the pitch. Sometimes it's a little too late. But, like, for example, I'm pretty sure Superfed is instantly going to tell me about that time he got beaten by a Wood Elf team that managed to base 3/4 of the Wood Elf team on his Beast of Nurgle.
That was the thing. So, to give more background to Infinite Pink, he joined up with the Rebel season 5, which I think was the same time I did, and played Infection Inc. the entire time. So for, what is that, 7 seasons.
He's made it to playoffs a lot in that 7
seasons.
He
has. And yeah, so 7 seasons. I think it's 3 playoff appearances. Yeah, he is quite a Nurgle team. I don't know if he's going to be coming back on them ever or if he's going to be starting over, but...
I actually need to reach out to him at the end of the season because I promised him I'd give him a holler when the season ended. I know he was super busy. Like, he had to drop from clan as well, where he captained the G-Man clan for a long time. To middling success, the G-Man clan had, like, really good coaches, and they seem to have that thing that Metal Clan has this season where they had really, really good coaches that on paper should win a lot and then didn't. And no one could figure out why. But it probably wasn't his fault.
Interesting. I don't know, clan enough to comment. But the team is healthy enough to make an appearance and return to Div 1 glory should he come back.
And Chet Manley's still alive, and Chet Manley will be instantly bountied if the team does come back.
Yeah, Chet Manley with an armor bust and two agility bust, which mean nothing.
And a niggle.
So. Oh, it is. Okay, 1 agility bust, 1 niggle, and 1 AV bust. So.
Yeah, the AV bust, yeah. I think, was what kind of... He was that... You know when teams have that one player that as long as that player's alive, the team isn't getting retired? Chet Manley is Infinite Pink's that one player. And I hate him so much because he cost me my run at the Super Bowl. But also, like, Infinite Pink, funny that he should be mentioned in the same episode as Hippie, because he's actually the coach that lost to Hippie in the finals, that Hippie won the Super Bowl off of the back of.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a strong team. He's actually played some solid games as well, so I certainly understand. I can't say I watched enough of his regular season games to really comment or speculate on how, you know, those went. But if you wanted to learn Nurgle, this is certainly a team to look at, and I think the way he built it is exactly the way I would build it. So absolutely no criticism there in the way he built his team.
Like I said, I feel like the only criticism I can levy on him, well, there's 2 criticisms, okay? Let's get one of them out the way. It's Superfed's favourite topic, which would be that he is he takes a long time on his turns. His matches...
He does have... Oh my god, you just reminded me.
I coined the nickname Infinite Think. In response to one of his games, which...
There was one game that was...
I think it was almost 3 hours.
And it was right at the peak of, like, everyone being like, oh, Superfed, 4-minute turns, rah, rah, rah. That, I got pinged by, like, probably 12 coaches to ask me to watch that game, if I was watching that game, had I watched that game, how long of that game I had watched before I turned it off. It was like, what, a 3-hour game?
Yeah, it was about 3 hours. And by the end of it, I think it was me and Zord, and we were like, let us die, man. Just let us... If you love us, you will kill us, kind of thing. Because it was against Wood Elves that wouldn't die. It was it Varxen, I believe?
See, I had a whole season of games that were like that, so that's where I'm just like, welcome to the party, pal.
I'm quite fond of the nickname Infinite Think. I don't know how Pink took it.
It's a clever wordplay, but probably, you know, bullying and mean, and you should be striked for it.
He's never complained to me, is all I'm saying. And I talked to him, because I've spoken to Pink quite a bit. He's actually a really, like I say, he's just, every interaction I've had with him, I can assure you, he's been a thoroughly lovely dude. Which I always think, like, isn't a qualifier for being on the list of the top 40.
Clearly not.
But at the same time, as a community league...
Do you need me to read the list of names again, my friend?
Well, you're on the list. I mean, we know that.
No. Hey, I've done stuff for the community.
Yeah, you do this for the community. I don't know if how much of it they just sat there going, God, Superfed's an idiot. Background. No, but it's always nice when, like, in a community-driven league, that you get to go, this coach is a really good coach, he's a lot of fun to play, and he's a genuinely nice bloke. Like, the genuinely nice bloke, but at the end, or lady, if they're a lady, and not sexist here. We don't have many of them, though, so it's...
Sure.
It's an easy assumption to make, right? It's just nice. It's just nice to have that little...
Yes.
So Mongoose is like, yes, shut up, Metal, you've talked enough about it. Mongoose wants his turn.
No.
It is Mongoose's turn.
It's like, it's what we talked about. Enjoy it whenever you lose to somebody that's at least a nice person, because if they're a jerk, then now it just makes you rage.
Mm-hmm. It does help if they are beating you and they're courteous about it, right? Like, yep. But anyway, speaking of Mongoose wanting his turn, it is Mongoose's turn.
All right, so I was nervous about this because I want to do a good job to make you guys proud. So I spent a lot of time researching and, you know, checking the stats and everything. But so I'm going with the team. The only team just embarrassed me in a game. And I'm going with Travel Scrabble from good old season 7 is when he started. Looking at it, he his very first season finished in first place. He's been in the upper tiers of REL since season 10. Yeah, season 10, it looks like he was in Division 2. Season 11, finished first. Season 12, finished. And this season, he's right up there as well in third place right now. But he was a really great guy. He thoroughly outplayed me. And it was, I think I told you guys whenever you had me on the first time, like, it was a humbling. And anytime you're afraid to play a coach, I think that's a good quality of proving that they're a good coach to, you know, at Blood Bowl.
Yeah, Travel Scrabble is definitely on my list. Actually higher on my list than some of the people I've already nominated for a top 40. The biggest knock on Travel Scrabble is his team results are directly correlated to the stats and development of his werewolf.
Now, he has also got a really good white. I've been chatting to Travel Scrabble today, actually. So the timing is really interesting, because I've been chatting, we were debating today, he's just hit legend on his vampire white.
Yes.
And he's so into, like, 10 minds about what to take on that player, because it's like, on any normal white on a Necro team, it's super easy to pick the level ups, right? But when it's got strength 4 and agi 4 to start, it's like, well, it's not going to be piling on, because you're not putting that thing on the floor, especially because it's niggled. It's not. Yep. It's unlikely to stand firm, because you don't want it to get hit a lot. You're not going to use it for that. So what do you give that player? And it's, we've been back and forth a lot, and I was like, to be honest, the only person who can help you here is you, because you've got to tell us how you're using this one player. And I think his team is so full of
something that I'm sure he hasn't. Well, okay, actually, it's Necro, never mind. I was going to say, honestly, I would consider Frenzy.
I like that.
See, I don't, because it's a Necro team already, and you're already dead.
Yeah,
you tend to lean on your whites to be the safe blitzers that aren't going to Frenzy trap themselves.
True.
But Frenzy is so good, though, especially on, just in general. Even, and he already has Mighty Blow on it. And position.
So if it's not going to be Frenzy, then for my money, it's probably Juggernaut, or you could do something from the normal tree, which would surprise some people.
I don't want to say necessarily what we've been talked about, but there's, because obviously I don't want him to, you know, to give away.
I do know, because he was talking about and Rel One chat. I think he was talking about Sure Hands.
Strong Arm was mentioned as well, actually.
Strong Arm's interesting,
because he's used the player as a quarterback in the past. Sure. But actually, my suggestion, interestingly, was Pro.
Yeah,
on the grounds that he's such a unique player that clearly you lean on in you know, he's one of those players that you go to when you need something done, right?
Right, and you don't have dodge, but he does dodges.
Yeah, and
don't have sure hands, but he picks up the ball. Yeah, you know what? That's not a bad choice.
And with that, that's interesting, because I had said Fend because of the niggle, just because of the utility, and you would keep it from being piled on as much from blitzes or, you know, normal.
I would worry the only downside to the friend noise, it makes him a bit more up. It's quite passive, whereas that player is such an active part of his strategy. And I mean, let's not get me wrong, he's got some other good players as well. Do you wanna let us clue us in here, Fed, to the other insane players that Travel Scrabble's rocking?
Well, so yeah, I mean the biggest defender of Travel Scrabble's success by StatUps is the Agi5 werewolf Muttley the Third, who literally out of the gate, level one or level two level up was Agi up, level three level up Agi up, and then got Blodge, Tackle, and Leap. And that's now a legend with Leap.
I've never seen a leaping werewolf animation ever. That sounds so good.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's crazy. And with Tackle, like that's an absolute surf threat anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'm pretty sure he jumped in two tackle zones, no issue. And then and then passed out or something, you know, and there's nothing I could do to stop that.
And then his other wolf is also first level, getting a level up. Muttley Jr. got strength as his first level, and then into Blodge, Step, Mighty Blow, Tackle at legend. So these are definitely disgusting werewolves. And ever since he got them, this team's been around for a while, and he used to hang out mostly in Rel 3 and 2. And then as the wolves developed, made his way up to the top, managed to win Div 1 once before in the past, and has made playoffs many times now since he's been up there.
And Mungus, you're saying he's winning Div 1 again, right? Oh,
he's in third place right now, but he's
pressuring
there.
For it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got two playoffs from Div 1 and then one playoff from Div 2. So definitely successful career with this team.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think his biggest, my biggest criticism of him is actually, and I think Mongoose might back me up on this because I know he loves this skill too, is he doesn't seem to take dirty player zombies. Or for a long time, he argued against taking dirty player zombies.
He's not, yeah, Michaels, I believe, is the one that mentioned Travel Scrabble and likes to call him out for it because he is not the biggest fouling coach with Necro.
He does have a dirty player now.
Actually, he has two dirty players now.
Yeah, he's got two dirty players now. And I don't remember him falling against me either, but even having those, it was a threat. Especially with zombies. I mean,
I think part of it is just, you know, product of your environment, right? And so now that he's in Div 1 and every other match is Nurgle or Chaos, I'm sure that has impacted the way he has to play. And the dirty players are more there for a reactive, don't pile on my werewolf, please.
Yep.
Versus, you know, previous divs and in the past when he was not winning as much. I believe so. He was in the division that I made a music video, or not a music video, but like an intro video for, where it was all Necro and all Elves and Rel 3. And I want to say this was like 5 seasons ago or something like that. But I remember the clips that I put together for it. And it was like, yeah, 4 or 5 Necro teams all in the same division. And that was his unique Necro thing, was that he didn't have like Mighty Blow Wolves at the time. He just had a bunch of developed zombies that he could kind of, you know, bully and treat as really slow fights. And so, you know, he wasn't doing a bunch of the dirty player fouls at that point in time. But
I do admire
like he's adapted.
Yeah, the full 16 player roster. Tremendous.
Yeah, and it's not even that bloaty. Like, it's a 2K, you know, Nurgle, or not Nurgle, 2K Necro team, which is going to be getting inducements against a lot of his Nurgle opponents in Rel 1.
Yeah, that's crazy. That is legitimately nuts that he's that big and still getting inducements, man. Like, how many legends does he have then? He's got the Legend Wolf. He's got the Legend White now.
He's got 3.
Is both wolves legends?
Yes.
Oh my god, that's kind of gross.
Yeah, Strength 4, Mighty Blow. I mean, it's impressive.
He's also only rocking 1 golem.
Yeah, because obviously, when you've got wolves that are that gross, you know, you really need to keep up on your tax payments.
Yeah, he's got a 16-man roster with 1 golem.
Well, what can you do, right? Is it how developed is Golem?
That, level 7 or level 6.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah, but he that's his strategy, right? To avoid paying that golem tax, he's getting a golem tax credit.
Running one. It's like a rebate. It's like if you already won one. Like you all right.
Really, the government owes him.
It's an exemption. It's an exemption, right?
Yeah. Like... There you go. It's an exemption from the tax because he only has one.
And plus, only one permanent injury. I mean, for a team that's been around as long, I mean, that's solid.
Yeah, that's really nice. I think, to be fair, when it comes to Rebel Necro tax, it's all okay because Surge is paying all of our tax. I don't know if you've encountered Surge's history with flesh golems, but needless to say, it's not good. Like, the man... I think the last time he had two flesh golems, he played Shawnman in playoffs, and then very quickly had zero flesh golems.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the taxes are higher in Big O, I'm sure.
Do you reckon? I don't know. I would have thought, like, the Oceanic region maybe... You know, small businesses and stuff? I don't know.
Are Necro really a small business? I don't think Necro are small business.
Okay, fair enough. Maybe it's the regional branch of the small regional branch of a larger business. I don't know.
Yeah.
Are we ever going to get to Superfed? Anyway, does anyone debate Travel Scrabble being on there? Because genuinely, my biggest issue with Travel Scrabble, like I say, is for a long time he didn't dirty player. And for the first season or so I was in Rebel, I couldn't tell the difference between Travel Scrabble, Michaels, and Barmutian.
Barmutian was the other one, yeah, that's right, that doesn't foul.
There was like three of them, and they all played Necro, and the teams looked very similar. And
yeah. Well, okay, so the other knock would be just that he doesn't have a deep playoff, like a deep playoff run to kind of show off his talent against other top coaches, but you kind of overrule that by the fact that he's winning consistently in Rel 1.
Top
coaches. So
yeah, that was my hesitation too. But having played him, I was like, well, you know, if you're gonna beat me 3-0, I think it seems fair. It seems quality.
If you're good enough to
that's
win,
coming from the most recent Rebel champ. Yeah, no big deal.
yeah. Like, to be fair, I think that does carry a certain amount of weight when a current Super Bowl champion goes, I'm scared of this coach. Like,
yep.
Yeah.
That adds some weight.
What's really interesting is all the arguments that we have just made for this coach can also be applied to the next coach I'm going to bring up in a very similar fashion. So, my second pick for the week is going to be the current King of Rel. It is Not for Science and his wonderful, disgusting, often broken and beaten and battered High Elf team, which is Felwith Kodadal. This team is, it has had so many stat ups and so many legendary players and so many deaths. If you ever get the chance, you should look at RebelNet and look at the previous players list. There are probably at least a dozen players that have multiple stat busts that are now dead. And then probably, I guess it tells you the total number of dead players. He's had 30 players die on the team. Jesus. The team has been around since season 6. Currently, like I said, top of Rel 1. Some of the highlights, I think it's also lost three legends or thereabout.
It carries a lot of injuries regularly as well, doesn't it?
Like, right. Yes. Yeah. So his thing for the longest time was, well, it's got a stat up, so you know, it's fine if it's stat busted. Because it makes it up elsewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're not saying like it's strength 4 and it's been busted back to strength 3. We're saying like it's strength 4 but it's been busted to Agi 3, but that's okay because it's still strength 4.
Yeah, if you ever watch a Superstar Shootout, there's almost always one of these players on the teams because they're ridiculous. Like a Strength 2 line elf that had Agi 5, Wrestle, Leap, Tackle, and Strip Ball was also AV busted. The only reason that it's not on the team still is because it literally died.
In playoffs, I believe, as well.
Well, and I think that one might have been to a rabbi or a rabbi. He took out a bunch of these players, but
I know was it Wolfbark took out paid a reaped a tally on this, or was it Crystal Hunter? Crystal Hunter, I think.
Crystal Hunter, he did the AV bus to the One Turner legend that's still alive. There was a legendary thrower that's now dead. There was another thrower that was level 6 that was dead. There was, I think, 3 level 6 catchers that are dead.
But this level 6 catcher, I just have to read this because it's so awesome. Double strength up, block, dodge, frenzy. And then it had double movement busted, agility busted.
Yeah, the double niggle, double movement bust is kind of crazy.
It was the legitimate definition of skipping leg day, right? Like,
yeah.
Golly.
Currently on the team, there's still amazing pieces. So I mentioned the One Turner. It's a natural One Turner with Juggernaut, so it just 2+ its way in for a touchdown. He's got a Blitzer, Lord Nathaniel Marr, which is basically a human Blitzer. It's got Bitey Blow, Piling On, Tackle, Jump Up, Juggernaut, and Dodge. And that's a legend.
I've got to say as well, I absolutely love the pickup of Juggernaut on the One Turner. Like,
yep.
I feel that's such an intro. A lot of people might not even think to go for something like that, but the ability to obviously just hit the back line with a one dice, or if you can get one of your other players up, make it a 2 dice, and then shove the guy out of the way rather than having to do the dodges, like, mm-hmm. It's so smart. It's such a... And I think a lot of people write off Not for Science because, oh, anyone who's carrying that many injuries must be a bad coach, right? And I'm not saying I believe that, but I certainly think it's easy for a lot of dyed-in-the-wool, old-school, hardcore Blood Bowl coaches to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're so used to going, oh, that's a dead player. He's got minus AV or minus strength or minus agility. He's dead, right? Like,
right.
They're so used to saying that, that when you see someone who is keeping them, you go, oh, he's a bad player. But he's... Bad players can't keep getting, like, legends, near legends, level 6 players, left, right, and center in high divisions. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard enough keeping an elf team alive in Rel 2, Rel 1. Never mind getting legend players out of them.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Like, you... And I look at the actual stat bust, and, like, none of these things are really that bad. Like, he's got a Agi 5 Wrestle Line Elf. It's got a Armor Bust. Okay, so it's at AV 7. You're telling me that you would not have a Movement 6, Strength 3, Agi 5 Wood Elf?
Yeah.
Because I would. I would have that in a second. It's Agi 5. You throw a leap on that thing, and you can now sack the ball anywhere.
Well, anywhere within 6 squares.
Sure, but you roll the GFIs if you need to. He's got a movement bust on a line elf, but the line elf has wrestle, guard, leap, and dodge. Okay, I keep that piece anytime. Like, these are not bad stat busts. Even the crazy palming juggernaut blitzer has an agi bust, but it's a human blitzer. It's a super effective. Why would you get rid of a legendary human blitzer?
I think, like, that's the thing is, people forget that, like, these players would be great on other teams.
Mm-hmm.
And then, therefore, they're probably still great on this team.
And I think, and I think I've only ever seen them play High Elves. But the thing with High Elves is they don't have a lot of skill ups. They have a lot of stats, and as you level them up, you get skill ups. So if your stats go down just a little bit, while your skills are there, that's a valuable trade. It's much better than having just a rookie line elf with really good stats that doesn't have any skills.
Have you played Not for Science, Mongoose?
Yeah, he beat me. It was one of the earlier games of the season, and he played so unorthodox that I didn't know how to play against it. Plus, you know, One Turners are hard to stop, but really it wasn't that. He just, you know, he leapt in on a play. I left him an opening, and he did elf stuff, and that pretty much ended it. It didn't have anything to do with the One Turner. So I mean, he knew what he was doing, and
I do enjoy that, like, when you go, I didn't know how to play against him because he didn't play by the book. It's like, we often say, like, one of the common comments that we make when we talk about Luminous, again, one of the best coaches, I think, I've ever met, and I think Suitfed will probably back me up when I say Luminous is one of the better coaches in all around.
Easily.
We always say the one thing he's vulnerable to is not seeing the bad player. Because he'll look at the players and go, this is a really good player, I'll defend against that. This is a really good player, I'll defend against that. And then someone who makes an unorthodox, like, less than effective player, but it works because he knows the strengths and weaknesses of his team. That's how you, like, toppled the Lumi.
Yeah, it's very effective in Blood Bowl because, of course, you know, dice are a factor and anything can happen. And if you don't account for someone making, you know, on Kislev, if you don't account for them making five leaps to surf your, you know, whole team, then, you know, you're gonna get caught one day and you're gonna get burned by it, now, even if that's crazy.
Yeah, and like it's funny because when you think back on when I played him, I have a weird taste in it because I did some creative stuff and I frenzied out his one turner and knocked him out to the crowd and the ball landed into the hands of a player in the end zone and that's how he scored on his turn eight. But that's not the reason he won. You know, like that was a thing that happened.
God, I wish I had a clip of that because that's incredible and heartbreaking for you, Monk.
Well, it wasn't. You know, at first it was like, this is BS, and I was feeling real good about myself. And then when it went in, it was like, man, it didn't even matter. It didn't even matter. It was also blizzard conditions, so that made it his one turner less effective. You know, it was a goofy game.
Oh man. Oh, but no, I do agree. And the one other thing you can say about Not For Scientist, he always knows exactly how much Mighty Blows in his division.
Yeah. Well, and that, like, it's funny that that's the meme that like sticks out for him because he's probably put up with more Mighty Blow and Bash games than any other Elf team because his team's been around for so long. Like, I can't point to another Elf team that's lasted this long.
I only mention it because that's the first time he ever appeared on my... Obviously, being out of region and things, that's the first time he ever appeared on my radar was when we got hit by an admin complaint saying, oh, there's too many much Mighty Blow in my division. And we were like, well...
But what was the number? Was it like 56?
42. It was 42. Like 42. I remember it was 42 because a player called Death Not For Science and then they hit you with a 42. And it just all feels like... a little bit surreal, like, is this really happening? Is this actually a conversation, or is this just is it all a joke? Am I missing something? Am I not in on the personal joke? But I have to say that was the initial exposure we had to him, because obviously that if that's all you know about someone, it's easy to put them down to he's just going to complain. But when you see that he's stuck with this team through all of the injuries, he's turned up in playoffs and he's put up honestly some incredibly entertaining matches.
Yeah.
No, I think the 42 is always going to stick around. And if you listen to the podcast, Death Note Science, I'm not saying it. It isn't a disrespect anymore. I think it's almost become, it's swung right. You know, like how the wheel goes round. It's almost back to you've got a meme now because it's a mark of respect. Like, it's part of how we remember you because we care enough to remember you because you've put on such a good show and you've put on such a hell of an attempt to get to where you are now. And I want to see them. I want to see them in playoffs. I want to see them more of them because he just plays absolutely. So crazy. It's like it's so unorthodox and so such an interesting team that I'd catch one of those games every day of the week over two kill teams just backhanding each other.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah. Plus, he's proving that you know you don't even in a division with what seven kill teams you can still win as Elves.
Right. Well, and, like, it'd be so easy to get down. Like, we've seen coaches literally quit Rel 1 because they lost a, you know, developed player. And this team has lost more developed players than anyone else. And they're still winning on top of it. Like,
it's possibly arguable this team has lost more developed players than the entire rest of the current Rel 1 added together.
Yeah. Just this season, he lost a level 6 strength 4 catcher. A level 6 strength 5 catcher, a legendary thrower, and a level 5 blitzer. And that's not counting any of the line elves, which I'm sure all had stat ups and things like that too.
And where's your man located right now? Where is he? He is top.
Number 1, yeah.
So he can't be that unorthodox. Like, I just... it must work, right? Like, that's not luck. You don't get to rel 1 first by luck.
Right.
Yeah.
And he still got a strength 2 Lionel. With kick and block.
Long, long may he live.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think that covers the top 40.
I think it does. I think it's time to wrap it up because I'm getting dirty looks off the missus, and we're hitting on, we're a little bit under the 2-hour mark, but we did start late, and honestly, I kind of want to go to bed.
I'm hungry, so I'm good with that.
So, yeah, I'm just going to leave you with the favorite section, and I just want to say, you know, we talked at the beginning of the show about the coronavirus and stuff, and it, we should be taking it seriously, but you've got to laugh, I think, at times like this as well, and I did see a joke on, I stole this one shamelessly off Reddit, and it made me laugh so much, which was, you know, ultimately, we knew the entire world was going to get the coronavirus eventually, but China got it right off the bat.
Oh.
Nice.
I love Mungoose just went, oh.
I was like, we went there.
You can't say that. I was like, yes, I can. It's my show.
So a bear walks into a bar, says to the bartender, I'll have one whiskey and one Coke. Why the big pause? Asked the bartender. I don't know. I was born with them.
Okay. I heard. Yeah, okay. Mungoose, you got one prepared? Please tell me you got one prepared.
I do. So, have you guys heard about the chameleon that doesn't change colors? It has erectile dysfunction.
Nice.
The missus is just came barging into my study with her phone held out, because you can hear me because through the wall and stuff. She's been trying to get me to tell this joke on the podcast for about 6 weeks, so I'm going to get this one out of the way. What's made of leather and sounds like a sneeze? A shoe.
Oh, okay.
Right. She's now so insanely proud of herself. So yeah, I think we should wrap it up now. So Mungoose, thank you so very much for joining us. I know there was a few audio issues, guys, but I hope you still enjoyed listening to Mungoose. And Mungoose, I hope you enjoyed being on.
Yeah, no, I had a blast. I really appreciate it. I mean, I love talking Blood Bowl, and you guys are good people. So,
oh wow,
happy to help, and I'll work on the audio issues.
You hear that, Sufet? He thinks you're good people.
I know, it's nice.
He's such a nice guy. He still pretends you're nice.
Yeah. Hopefully I can fix the audio issues for the future.
No, absolutely, man. And you're always welcome back, because you're definitely fun to talk to. You're knowledgeable about the game. You've got a lot of interesting things to say. It's the conversation just flows. And that is the number one. As long as, like, apart from the slight audio hiccups, I get that. And we'll edit them in post. It's fine.
But yeah, well, I appreciate it.
No, the conversation definitely flows, and it's so easy to talk to you. So, I mean, that instantly gets you, like, on the guest list, right? Like, you can come back.
No, I appreciate it. Like I said, I love this. You know, I was super excited for it. You know, in all this hectic time, I know you and I talked yesterday. It's just nice to get away and talk about a hobby instead of,
yeah, like the serious stuff. So, no, yeah. Absolutely. And Superfed, once again, mate. It's, well, as always, in fact, it's always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
I think I'm about the only person in Rebel that truly likes Superfed, but, you know, it's...
I get so many references of all the people that I'm supposed to just sleep with in order to get out the frustration, so it's a long list.
I'm still waiting for you and Mariscadu to get it on. That's all I'm saying. Like, the admin channel, when Superfed and Mariscadu are going at it, you literally, we're all sat there going, Jesus, will they just have sex? Like, this needs to be cleaned up, right? Cleared up right now. It's just crazy in here. But yeah, so thank you to you both for joining me. Obviously, I know there's a lot of stuff going on in real life, so I do appreciate you taking time out to do that. I also appreciate every single one of the Patreons that are backing us that makes this possible. That is Big Air, that is Coach Cool, that's Ezekiel, that's, you know what, I'm going to do them all. It's Finny, it's King Khan, it's Gunnerside, it's Herod Sakara. It's Guy, I don't know who you are because you haven't given me your Discord name. I'm sorry, but you're awesome too. It's Roberto. It's Jeff. It's Rex Longbourn. It's Practical Snow. It's Big Chuck. It's Callisti Mayer. It's Cool Kiwi. It's Hubster. It's Mr. Kervalian. It's Cthulhu Collector. It's another one who I don't have your real name. It's Aldar. If I've got the real names, I can't read them. I can't dox you on the podcast. It's Basman's Grob. It's Dr. Nick. It's Ninja Pirate Assassin. It's Lord Brainlord. It's Quackduixixix. He's not giving me an easy way out on that one, I'm afraid. It's another guy. I've only got your real name. It's Zinge. It's Rugbot. It's if you want these names reading out, you need to give me your screen names. It's Grandview King. It's Dash Shootenham. It's Slice and Dice. It's Dwiggy. It's Tater Spyro. It's Dr. Hep. It's T-Cold. It's Viking Cop. It's Lord Owl. And it is Arch XL. All of which back us through Patreon. It's super appreciated. It pays for all our hosting. It pays for all our prizes. You guys absolutely rock. And do remember, like, on a serious note, like, the Patreon's cool, having these cool prizes is cool, but obviously real life is crazy right now. No one is going to think less if next podcast I don't read your name because you've had to take the money away because you've got real life stuff going on. This comes second, guys, so don't be silly with your money, right? If you need it, you need it.
And I'll jump in because the first of the Patreon, whatever you want to call it, advertisements will be occurring at the end of this episode.
It will. And that was for Dash Shootenham, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Long time donator to the Rebel, long time friend of the Rebel, and genuinely a lovely dude as well. So I'm glad that we got Shooties knocked out. But it does mean that we're moving forwards with the rewards. Thank you, Superfed, for that. This has been the longest outro in the world. We've been Rebel Alliance. This has been episode 98. We've got one more normal episode to go, then we've got the massive 100th episode bonanza where we don't even still know exactly what's going on, but it's going to be awesome. We'll see you next week or the week after, depending on when we can get back together. You've all been great. These guys have been lovely. Stay classy, folks. And seriously, stay safe out there, guys.